T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Good morning. It's 8:18 on WBEN, and joining us live on the line, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar, who will be in Buffalo today. Alex, thanks for joining us this morning.
Pleasure to be with you all and your listeners. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to get started just by talking about some of the reasoning you're going around the country, talking about getting back to some form of normal and why you feel that's important. And when we say some form of normal, where do you think we are as a country right now in a return to getting back to business?
Well, I'm glad you phrased it that way. You know, we're on our way to getting to normal. It's going to be normal eventually, and that's what I try to tell folks. Often people say, is there a new normal? Are things permanently changed? It doesn't have to be that way. Thanks to this historic response President Trump has led, we've got surveillance, testing, contact tracing and isolation. We've got hospital capacity, and we're going to be bringing more and more therapeutics and vaccines online. So we're going to get through this. But right now, as you said, we got to get out of our homes, for those of us for whom it's safe, get out of our homes, get back to work, get back to school, get back in the communities. That's why I'm coming up to Buffalo, is to meet with some of your great healthcare providers and your business leaders to talk about how we can do that, do it safely, because there are real health consequences to having people not getting healthcare, and those can often outweigh the benefits of disease prevention.
You know, Alex, it's a big week here. We're getting haircuts again. Outdoor dining starts today. We've got more indoor retail suddenly since yesterday. For some, though, it's not fast enough. I mean, many areas of the country are fully open. Economies are coming back. How do you find that balance?
You know, that's the benefit of our federal system, is there's a lot of deference to state and local leaders, because, frankly, the situation that I may see in Pittsburgh or Jacksonville may be different than what I encounter in Buffalo, and what you see in Buffalo may be different and likely is than what you see in New York City. And so that's why I tell people, first, assess your own individual situation. What are your risk factors and the risk factors of your loved ones at home in making your own decisions? And then follow the advice of your local leaders, because they're going to know the situation on the ground. You know, Buffalo's in is not in very bad shape. It's got down to 4% testing level, positive testing levels. And the international standard is you look for less than 10%. So you all are at 4%, meaning you're testing a lot of people. The cases are on the downswing, hospitalizations, ICU utilization on the downswing. You can be out. You can go eat. I got to tell you, down in Florida, I went out and ate at a restaurant, had barbecue at a restaurant in Jacksonville, and I really felt like a human being again.
A key to reopening, though, that you've said in the past and the CDC certainly recommends, is abiding by some of these guidelines. Masks and social distancing, those play a big role in reopening a lot of things.
They do, and it's just a bit of personal responsibility. You know, we wear the mask, the face covering, not so much to protect us as to protect others, to prevent, in the event that we were asymptomatic and carrying the disease, that we don't accidentally cough, sneeze, or spray droplets out onto other individuals. So be thinking of the facial mask as I protect you, you protect me. And especially that's most appropriate in settings where you aren't able to manage effective social distancing. That's why, you know, if you go to the grocery store or the pharmacy, or you're going into a healthcare setting, be sure you've got that mask on. Follow the guidance of local leaders. It's a fairly minimal inconvenience for us to be able to get out and about.
You're watching, Alex, all of these protests and demonstrations that have been occurring, you know, over the last week and a half around the country. Hundreds and thousands of people standing shoulder to shoulder. Some are wearing masks, but many are not. What are you anticipating in a couple of weeks?
Well, first, of course, protests like these, you know, peaceful protests are to call attention to the kind of grave injustice such as George Floyd's death are vital to our American history, and we support that. And so it's important to begin with that. For those who engage in peaceful activities like getting out, protesting, having your voice heard, just like for anyone else, we do encourage that you protect yourself and your family members by appropriate mask, facial covering, and social distancing. I think we'll see within about 5 to 7 days, we'll start seeing if we see any upticks in terms of case counts as a result of various of the activities. But I just encourage everyone, think about your own individual circumstance and think about protecting your loved ones back home, because you'll be spreading whatever you get to them.
Does it worry you at all that the masks have been made into a sort of political issue?
Well, I certainly don't buy into any notion of masks being political. We each make our assessment in the circumstance of the local conditions, the disease spread, and also, again, are you in conditions where it's below, where you're going to need to be closer than, say, 6 feet to a lot of people and interacting? Often people talk about the president. Well, the president is a very different circumstance. You know, he is tested regularly. Anybody who's in proximity to him is tested that very day. He is the leader of the free world. There are different protocols around him. And so literally he and those he's in proximity with have just tested negative. And so it's a very different circumstance than all the rest of us in our daily lives or work.
We're speaking live with Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar this morning, who is going to be in Buffalo today. Alex, when can people start visiting residents in nursing homes and long-term care facilities? I mean, the lockdown is creating a public health crisis of its own without having that family interaction.
Yeah, Susan, it's a really important question. You know, I've been through this myself. My father died a couple of months ago and was unable to see him or be with him because he was in an intensive care unit, not because of COVID, but the hospital, of course, can't let visitors in. And so you have to use social media tools or things like FaceTime and other vehicles like that to be in touch. It's important for mental health. A lot of our facilities have worked to get iPads and other communications devices available. Our senior citizens in our nursing homes are our most vulnerable people. Over 40% of the deaths that we've suffered from COVID are nursing home residents. And so I know it's hard. I know that, as you said, there's a health issue to this, because not being able to be holding hands with a loved one, not being able to be physically in touch, that has its own health consequences for our nursing home residents. But the risk to them of severe consequences and ready spread of disease are so severe, we have to go the extra mile on them. Especially, we've got to ring fence our nursing homes. We've got to test all of our patients in them. We've got to test our people that are the staff that are coming in there. And we need our governors to get more aggressive in protecting the most vulnerable, the most at risk. Our governors have got to step up to the plate protecting our nursing home residents.
When do you see a visitation policy? I mean, sometime this year?
I'm certain we'll get to the point where we can have visiting into our nursing homes this year. But we've got to that's where the governors and our nursing home leaders are going to have to come up with protocols to make that work. You can introduce people into healthcare settings in ways that still protect the individuals and residents. So many of our nursing homes, though, are failing at just the basics of preventing patients from spreading to patients or staff spreading to patients. Until they have mastered that, it's unwise to introduce another variable in terms of visitors, but it can be done just as we can go to restaurants, go to work, and go to school. You can do these things in ways that are safe, that don't run an untoward risk of spread of disease, but master the basics first, and then you can introduce the next level of risk, which would be visitors coming in, and figuring out how to do that in the safest way possible. And our governor's going to have to take the leads on this.
Every week we get more and more news on a vaccine, a lot of it positive over the last month. How important is it that when that vaccine is at a point where it's made available to the public, that it is available to the public, that the cost is kept down and it's available to everybody?
Absolutely, it's very important, and we will ensure that any vaccine the U.S. government has a part in developing is either going to be free or affordable to the American people. You know, what we're doing right now in Operation Warp Speed, the historic Apollo project-like effort the president has launched to get us vaccines by the end and beginning of next year in the United States, is we're actually partnering with these vaccine companies to speed the development process, but then we're also buying manufacturing capacity and scaling up manufacturing. Well, I can tell you this, if we've done the manufacturing and we bought it, well, we're going to have that. That's going to be our product, and then that's going to be made available to the American people, and that's going to either be free or affordable to them. So it's a major priority of ours. This will not be the barrier to vaccination in the United States.
Alex, go ahead, Brian.
Are we going to see a point where testing is widespread enough where people can go back to all jobs, you know, no matter what the interaction is with the public, and be able to have a test? And if we are, whose effort will that be? Is that the federal government? Is that a state? Is that private, companies? Who should be leading that charge?
So first, it's important that we reframe that question there about testing, that you're not going to have, nor do you need, the 330 million Americans to get tested every morning when they wake up. That's not the standard. What you need to do is the six-part program that we've laid out, which is first you do surveillance in our communities. So you look for influenza and COVID-like illness through our massive surveillance systems that we have for public health disease in the United States. You ensure that every one of those individuals are tested for COVID. If they're positive, you then move into isolation, contact tracing, and treatment of those individuals, and you test their contacts, you treat them. That's the second part, aggressive testing. We've got historic levels of testing, over 16 million tests done. We'll do more than another 10 million in the next couple of weeks. We're at a penetration level in this country where we're achieving international standards of 5.9% positive rate. That's well in excess of global standards. And then you're going to do asymptomatic. What you were referring to there is you're going to want to do asymptomatic testing of core settings. It might be workplace, like a meatpacking facility. It might be prisons, nursing homes, schools. Enough testing of just everybody or samples of people who are asymptomatic to identify, do you have a nascent outbreak you need to deal with? And then you go to that contact tracing containment. You make sure you have hospital systems that have enough supplies and enough capacity. Then you make sure you got treatments, therapeutics, and then vaccines. So six-part, all of that connects together, and the testing strategy is but a part of that, both symptomatic and surveillance testing.
How worried are you that Americans are fatigued with all of this? They've moved on, especially as the headlines have changed, and maybe become complacent to this.
Susan, it's a really important point that we talked a bit about back before all of the lockdowns began. We call it mitigation fatigue. There really is only so long that you can expect people to sacrifice at the levels that they've done. And the American people have been truly heroic in their sacrifice here. But the economic and social dislocation has immense personal, healthcare, economic consequences. And so that's why with the foundations President Trump's laid, that our governors have laid, working together, we can now get back out there. We got to get elective procedures going again. We've had hundreds of thousands of fewer cancer screenings done. I'm going to go to Roswell Park Cancer Center today, and I'm going to see, and it's going to tear my heart out to see and hear about how many people have foregone diagnosis of cancer or even treatments for cancer during this period. We've got to get reopened, got to get people back in for their treatments, their screenings, or we may lose more people from the healthcare consequences of this than from disease.
You mentioned a trip to Roswell, I believe Buffalo General as well, and going through a lot of the country and some of these hospitals. What's maybe something that's given you a positive spin on the future? You know, Roswell is one of these places that has worked with clinical trials and therapeutics, trying to find something that can help patients who are either hospitalized or maybe even before they're hospitalized who contract COVID. What are some of the things that are giving you a positive outlook?
Well, I think people ought to actually be feeling very positive about the future here as we think about therapeutics and vaccines. President Trump has devoted the full power of the U.S. government and the private sector against this. And on therapeutics, for instance, what we're doing is we're right now in clinical trials. We'll get the results relatively soon of what's called convalescent plasma. Somebody gets the disease, recovers, you take their plasma, and you actually give that to an individual who is suffering from COVID. It's like an immune system boost. You're giving them the very antibodies that somebody else has created to attack the virus in them and hold it at bay so it doesn't go any further. So we'll get the results of the initial trials of that soon. We have what's called hyperimmune globulin, where we take that plasma and we basically distill that to really concentrated doses. We're testing also. And then we have monoclonal antibodies that essentially we chemically engineer those antibodies, and you get a shot of that or shots of multiples of those that give your immune system this power to restrain and fight back the virus. All of those are advancing in absolutely record time, and we're putting the full power and financing of the government behind all of those efforts, on top of course, the authorization of remdesivir, which is a therapeutic we've already seen really good results in patients around the country. We've gotten that to every state and territory, and we're seeing really positive anecdotal evidence from the use of that on our patients that are in very severe conditions.
We have heard some of the positives about remdesivir, and hopefully more positives in the future. Hey, thanks so much for coming. Enjoy your stay in Buffalo today and a lot of your visits along the way. It's Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar joining us live.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.